Today I get to talk to Laura Osumi from the Accent Institute. We come from very different starting points, but we both ended up helping teachers who want to become specialists in pronunciation or accent coaches like us. So today we're going to talk about idioms, phrases that have confusing multiple meanings, and cliches. So if you don't know the difference between those, stick around, because English has layers just like an onion. And I hope you enjoy this discussion just as much as we did. I'm Bianca, your personal American accent coach, and I'm here to help you master an American accent in English, because your voice is your choice when it comes to how you sound. I try to release a podcast episode every 2 weeks. And so you should really subscribe to whatever podcast platform you use so that you don't miss the newest episode. And by the way, if you want to see the full video of the episode, it's available at Accent Coach Bianca on YouTube. Now, let's get on with the show. Welcome, Laura. This is the first time that you've been with me today. This is Laura Osumi, and I want to have her introduce herself. But first, I want to talk about the three just main topics that we're going to cover today. It's interesting because we have somebody from a speech therapy background, but we're going to be talking about language. So we'll talk about idioms. We're going to talk about confusing phrases that might have multiple meanings, and then this other word of cliche. So we're going to talk about these three topics. So welcome, Laura. Thanks so much for coming. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, I'm Laura Osumi with the Accent Institute. You can visit my website at theaccentinstitute.com. You can find me on LinkedIn at Laura Osumi. You can find me on Facebook at the Accent Institute. Also, you could look for my Facebook group, the Accent Institute.
This is fantastic. And tell us, how long have you been working as a speech pathologist?
I have been a speech pathologist for 26 years. It's shocking almost just to say it, but I've worked with school-age children. I've worked with high school kids. I've worked with adults. And I am currently doing accent modification for people who want to transform their accents and try to feel confident with what they're saying and be understood.
That's awesome. Yeah, I like how you say transform, because a lot of people think there's certain connotations with the idea of accent reduction and there's something wrong with that there. It feels negative. Accent acquisition, accent modification. There's all these terms that we throw around. I like the idea of transformation. I might use that lovingly because I like the idea of that. And also I like to think of it as like a jacket that we can put on and take off anytime we want. So when we're with certain people, we might speak differently. I don't know if you've encountered that, because I know you have some bicultural ties too.
So it's called code switching. And I think that we all have our work voice. We use our work the way we talk at work. And then when we're at home or with friends, we talk a different way. And so it's just a matter of being able to switch back and forth. And for people who have more difficulty being understood by people, this is just a softening. I am from Louisiana, and when you travel sometimes even 15 minutes in any direction, the accent actually changes. There's probably not that many places in the country that are like that, but town I grew up in is one accent. A little further down the bayou is a different one. New Orleans, several different ones, down out toward Cajun country, Baton Rouge, Lafayette, even further, all different. And then North Louisiana is more of a southern twang. I really value people's cultures and people's accents because I have my own.
Yes, this is an important point. Sorry, go ahead. Yeah, it just makes me want to cut in and start to cut you off. But to say this is such an important point, because many people think, oh, the American accent, it's one homogenous thing, or standard American or general American, right? And it's really not. If you're not from a place, you might not notice, or you might notice big variations as you go from one place to another. But like you said, 15 minutes down the road, you might know if you grew up there. But if you're coming from the outside, you might not even hear those little differences, in the same way that we might not hear their differences. If I go to Germany and somebody from the north of Germany really notices the south of Germany or many different accents from there. So I think it's really worth saying that there's nothing wrong with any of those things, but in certain situations, you might want the ability to have more than one accent.
That's right. Exactly. I know with Italy, with all the different dialects, and there's so many different accent, so to speak, coming out of Italy. And I think that especially in a working atmosphere, you would want to be able to code switch, to be able to give your presentation so that everyone can understand and nobody is confused about what the message you're trying to get across.
Yeah, and you might want to use, getting into our topics for today, you might want to use, if you know them, some of those idioms or those cliches, or you know that this phrase has multiple meanings. And I don't want to say get into trouble, but I know a lot of people who work with international companies, they have to also moderate their speech in the other way, and they have to say, oh, I don't know if everybody in the room here has as much vocabulary as I do, so I need to pick my words carefully to be sure to avoid this way of speaking so as to include everybody and moderate my speech that way. So it's, I think the point is to have the choice. And when you know all these things, you can choose these things, which I think is really getting at least what I love to do in our work. I love to be able to give people the choice and the empowerment of saying, okay, now you get to make these choices and these decisions because before you didn't even know they existed.
Right. And knowing about them is really important too. I find myself, maybe it's because I'm from the South, but I find myself using a lot of cliches, a lot of idioms in my everyday speech. And it's hard too if others, not just using them to fit into the culture and kind of form a bond with people, but also to be able to understand them and know what they mean. Mm. Sometimes I say things and my kids are like, what does that mean? That's really important too. When you're ordering coffee or at a restaurant or mm-hmm. when you're dealing with someone over the phone for something, or someone uses mm-hmm. one of those idioms, mm-hmm. cliches, multiple meanings, and you're stuck because you don't know what they mean at all. So mm-hmm. it's a twofold thing, the receptive aspect of knowing what they mean and the expressive aspect of being able to use them and being able to use them with the right intonation, with the right, with, like when I say one of these things, where am I putting the accent? What's the important part?
Yeah, especially so, once we get more into the nuances of the speech, a lot of that nuance might just come from the intonation, not the words themselves, right? Maybe you have an idiom where there's a word, for example, one of these things we're going to talk about later is to knock on wood, right? I might know the verb knock. I know that the preposition is on, and I might know the word wood just fine, but I don't know that deeper meaning. Maybe I come from a culture, for example, I know in Arabic, if you translate it word for word, they have the same idiom, but not all languages or cultures might have the same association. So, you know, even though I know the word, I might not know the meaning there. And then what about stressing the word? I might then be talking about something else completely. Knock on the wood rather than, I don't know, next to the wood. Or it might then not be an idiom anymore. Yes, I might stress the preposition instead. And if I don't pick that up, I might be reading into it, whereas somebody's just saying to knock on something like the door or something like that. Yeah, so right. I think it's a really interesting mix of these two things that we're going to talk about today. So let's actually start with idioms and let's keep going with that list. So tell us maybe in your own words, what do we say when we mean idiom, and give us some examples.
So it's figurative language. It's a phrase that in one part, if you took it literally, it would be very silly. But when you take it the figurative meaning, it means something totally different. And everybody who speaks English accepts it as that's what it means. Mm-hmm. So for example, like your example, knock on wood, would be knocking on the door, knocking on the desk. That is something I actually say a lot. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. And then I do this. But it's when you say something that you hope won't happen, or you say, oh gosh, this is going to happen, and you say knock on wood so that it doesn't happen. Oh gosh, if I keep doing this, I'm going to get in a wreck. Knock on wood.
Uh-huh, you know? Uh-huh. And for people who can't see you right now, let me pause you for a second because.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. Because we have two versions of the podcast, right? So if people are listening right now to the audio version, they can't actually see what you just did. If they're watching on the YouTube video version, you can see. So let me just explain with my words. So Laura said, knock on wood. And she took her fist and she knocked on her own forehead, right? On her own head. So there's another meaning let's say, that goes deeper than that. The gesture suggests that my head is made of wood in a way. So I'm making fun, I'm also making fun of myself, not just using an idiom, which has another meaning, which means to what, to, how did you phrase it? To be lucky?
It's to ward off bad luck.
Okay. Okay. To ward off bad luck. Yeah. Get rid of that. Or how should we, avoid it. Maybe to avoid the bad luck, I knock on wood. And I think, as far as I know, this has an interesting history. I think all idioms have, there's a place that they come from, right? They're born from somewhere. And as far as I know, knock on wood comes from the fact that in ancient times, especially as from what I've heard in the Middle East, they would believe that jinn or genies would live in the trees. And you'd have to knock on the trees to get their attention. And anybody out there who knows better than me, please correct me on my knowledge, my lack of knowledge. But as far as I know, that's how, where it comes from. So when we knock on wood, we're trying to get the jinns to come out and help us with that luck. So like you said, probably ward off the evil thing that's happening.
I don't know where a lot of them come from, but sometimes I get curious and just Google it and there you go.
Super interesting. Yeah, super interesting. For example, so we had knock on wood. You were knocking on your head. I wanted to explain that, how that gave a second layer of meaning, that if you didn't know it and you just saw somebody knocking on their own head and pounding themselves on the forehead, you might be a little confused by this, and not just the words as well.
I feel like I do that when I can't find any wood, when I'm in the car. It's making fun of yourself. Oh, my head is made of wood, which if somebody said, oh gosh, my head's made of wood, you just are feeling like you can't really think today.
Yeah. So two levels there. And sometimes they're just straight up some kind of coded meaning. For example, I don't know if you know this, I work a lot with actors whose first language isn't English. For a lot of people who perform, especially on stage, whether it's stage or screen, there's another thing we often say, which has a coded meaning. It's an idiom. It's figurative. Tell us about that one a little bit. Something about the leg.
Break a leg. My daughters are in plays and people say that a lot, break a leg. Mm-hmm. And doesn't mean, oh my gosh, break your leg. It means good luck on the play.
Maybe you could even use those two together, right? Somebody says, break a leg, do a great job. And then they might say, oh, knock on wood.
And what I was just thinking the same thing.
They could probably go together, right? Yeah, absolutely. Right. And that kind of goes with the next one on our list, because tables are often made of wood. And you have another idiom here that I think is more used for meetings, right? And that maybe the professional sphere.
Yeah. And so I wanted to include that one because this is an area where you would likely use your better work speech. So let's table it is one. So if you're having a long discussion, you can't decide, people on either side of the table can't agree, you would say, okay, this meeting is running a little long. Let's table it until our next meeting. Mm-hmm. Just to say, let's wait. We don't need to settle this now. I can see that we don't agree on this. Let's table it. Mm-hmm. Let's wait until the next meeting to decide.
Mm-hmm. And for me, the figurative language, there's like a picture forming in my head. Let's just put it on the table, off to the side for now, or even under the table. Like, why table? I suppose because you're in a meeting, you're in a boardroom, and there's a big table there. But to help people remember these phrases, because they're figurative, for me, it's always helpful to think of a picture or a story possibly in my head.
Yeah.
So all of this figurative language. Can I pause you for a second? We're talking about a list of idioms. What can you tell us, if anything, about your personal interest from speech pathology to this kind of language? For example, when I see this list of things, I immediately think of people who are on the autism spectrum, right? And how figurative language and things like that, they have a hard time, more about processing and the cognition behind that. Did you have a certain interest or experience with this?
So speech pathologists work with speech articulation, but also language. I've worked with autistic children for 25 of those 26 years. I was in a school with all autistic children who couldn't be placed in a regular school. That school was all like nonverbal, 3 through 21.
Wow.
So I work with a lot of autistic children and also children who just have difficulty processing language. They have trouble with figurative language, trouble with inferencing, putting two things together and making a smart guess, you know, about what you need to extrapolate from that. Yeah, speech pathology covers a really wide range from voice to swallowing to stroke patients to all aspects of disordered language. I have a master's in language disorders.
Fantastic. Yes, I was trying to put that together, like where this interest is coming from. And just to remind people too, it's not just children who have these difficulties too. It's a lot of adults and people that you may know. So maybe you had this experience. I know I have in the past where you are talking to somebody and you may or may not know that they have some of these difficulties and you're using idioms because you don't even stop to think. We just use them all the time. Once you know them, you use them all the time, every opportunity you can get. And we don't really think, oh yeah, that actually has another meaning. And so when somebody needs a more literal kind of speech, I don't know about you, but I know that sometimes I forget that. And that would be also speakers of other languages too, when they're learning English as a second language, like exactly. We said earlier, to moderate that speech to what is appropriate to your listener or your conversation partner.
And there's lots of people, lots of adults walking around who have various issues that would tie into weak language.
Yeah. So let's continue a couple more idioms, and then maybe we can talk about the difference between an idiom and when something has multiple meanings and how that might be a different challenge completely. So we've gone through three already. Break a leg, knock on wood, to table something as a verb. And the next one is maybe you're ending something, and you want to say that you're done or that you're finished talking about it or you're no longer willing. What could I say in that case?
So you would say, I'm not talking about this, period. And so when you say period at the end of something, that means that's it. It's settled. We're not discussing it anymore.
End of discussion. You're saying the punctuation, which I think is hilarious. Yeah. Totally. We don't usually say comma, semicolon, you know, quote, we do finger quotes, right? We do air quotes, but we really distinguish this one as more of being a command, I feel like,
yes.
as in no more discussion, like we're done talking about this. And I think you mentioned you had kids, right? So you may have used this more often than me.
Yes. You're not going, period. although I think that people are using it more because when you talk into your phone, dictating into your phone, you have to say period.
Ah, true. Let's go on a little tangent about that really quickly, because when you're doing the speech to text, you do need to say comma, quotation marks, right? Dash, something like that. But now with AI, I wonder if, because I've seen this, I've seen some apps now that do intonation. I don't know if you've seen this. So there's apps that do intonation, and you can type out a sentence and the app will give you the line in happy voice, in sad voice, in frustrated voice. And so I wonder if we will have certain prompting, certain code words that we do, for example, like in a script for actors or something like that, that we might then have a code word in there that changes the voice or the response of how people deliver that line. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. I show that as when I'm teaching something needs to be emphasized, I will capitalize every word, every letter to be capitalized so that that's where your stress should be.
You mean, okay, are we talking about language or are we talking about meaning? For example, I'm writing a word and I want you to know that the syllable stress on the word, let's say period, it's in the first syllable. So are you saying that you'll capitalize the P and the E and maybe the R, or do you mean something else?
Yes, I do that, to say period. Mm-hmm. But if I'm teaching, I'm not going, I'm not going, I'll capitalize going. Mm-hmm. Or if I'm saying not going, I will capitalize the not.
And for the word stress.
Yes, for the word stress, to show what part is important to you, what meaning are you conveying?
Yeah, I feel like we have our own conventions that we've developed over the years. Do I capitalize it? Do I italicize it? Do I put quotes around it? Do I highlight it if I have a highlighter? But now maybe some of those conventions will become standardized with AI coming in, and we're all going to have to maybe get that meaning.
Especially with actors, some kind of paragraph that you're writing up for something for business, you're not going to do that, obviously.
Yeah.
But for actors to show where their stress might be, or sometimes actors want to get into their own part and really get into that character, and they don't want to be told what their character is. be thinking.
Yeah, or they'll make their own notes, they'll make up their own system. Yeah, absolutely, mm-hmm. absolutely. So that was an interesting little diversion. Let's go back to a couple more of these things. I like the next one because it's a verb that you wouldn't use in this way. For example, if I say I'm going to break something, that's usually a negative thing. But you have another idiom here about breaking that's maybe neutral or possibly positive. What would you say that is?
Mm-hmm. Can I break a 20? So let's say I go to the store and something costs 99 cents that I'm buying. Mm-hmm. Nothing costs 99 cents anymore, but... maybe it's a bake sale. Can you break a 20? Uh-huh. I only have this 20. I don't have any smaller bills. I don't have 10s, 5s, or 1s. Do you have change to give me, enough mm-hmm. change to give me for this 20? Mm-hmm. Or can you break 100?
Yes. I really like that one because it takes a lot of words, a big idea, or maybe it doesn't have to be a big idea. It's an easy idea, but to explain it previously, we had to use a lot of words. And now I can just use this one verb and it makes total sense, right? But if you didn't know that, you might think of the verb as in to shatter some glass, for example, right? If you don't know that part of the language, then you're missing out on that. Right. You have to explain it in a very long way around. For example, I don't know if you know this, I'm living in Mexico and I'm constantly searching for a way to say that in Spanish. I want a shortcut. I want to say, I have a large bill. I do not have any smaller bills. I'd like to buy this thing that doesn't cost very much, but I don't know if you have enough change in your register. Can we make this work? It's a whole conversation.
I did spend some time in Spain at a language school, but I don't know how to say that.
I'll let you know when I find out.
To add an inferencing layer to that, you hold up the and say, can you break this? Can you break this? And I'm making a breaking motion with my hands, but really, can you break this for change? And you're looking at the 100, putting that together.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Which is why I love humans, because here we are, we have language, which is mathematical, and then we have this artistic side of language, and we want to marry them and put them together. And humans are such good problem solvers that even if I don't speak anywhere close to your language, if I hold up a bill and I mime breaking it, mime what I need to do, because we don't actually rip cash to break it anyways. That's another layer that we're adding there. It's just that our brains are so interesting to me sometimes. Yeah. We can do this across languages. Even if the words aren't there, we can still figure it out. We can create that meaning, which is also very interesting. Here's another word that's really common, right? You were saying how you're in California and you guys have issues with fire. I might just call you up and ask how the weather is, right? And you might then respond, the weather's great, but...
Uh-huh. But I'm under the weather. But that doesn't mean, how's the weather? Mm-hmm, it means, how's the weather is, I'm feeling sick, I don't feel good, I'm under the weather, I have the flu, I'm in bed with my PJs on.
Yeah.
And so weather can mean, is it sunny, blue skies, or raining, or... But it can also mean I'm under the weather. Those words put together like that means I don't feel good today. Yeah.
Surprisingly, though, the next day when you're feeling much better, you're not going to say I'm the weather or I'm over the weather or I'm beside the weather. Right? We just don't do all those things. The only one we use is under the weather, which I think is it's funny. And if you're from the outside, you might be like, why under? Why not over? And first of all, prepositions are no fun. But second of all, now I'm joining a preposition with a noun in a way that changes and creates a whole new meaning. You know?
Exactly. There's so many prepositions that do that in English. Yeah.
Totally.
And this one, I feel like this next one, I feel it could have to do with work too. I've said this before, I didn't get this done and now I'm behind the eight ball.
You might actually say, which ball?
A daughter who had a book due and didn't, I was counting, you need to read this many pages per day. You didn't read yesterday. So now you're behind the eight ball.
Yes. So it's not just about getting a little behind. Maybe you can still catch up, but if you are not available or if you don't know the game that it refers to and the predicament you might be in inside playing this game, then you wouldn't know the reference to this at all. So tell us, if you can, a little bit about the game that it refers to and what the meaning is.
So it refers to the game of pool. And so you can't hit the eight ball in until the very end. And if you're behind the eight ball and all the other balls are scattered, and you hit the eight ball and it goes into the pocket, you automatically lose the game. So you are in a big predicament. And if you use that idiom, then I'm behind the eight ball or you're behind the eight ball because you missed doing this, then you know that you're in a pretty big predicament and there's a likely possibility that you will lose whatever.
Yeah, so not just falling a little bit behind, but you're now in a position where you're stuck, right? So the idea is I'm stuck behind, at least in the game, I'm behind the ball where it makes it really difficult to come back from that. So saying you're behind the eight ball means, man, how am I going to get out of this? To use another phrase, you could say you're in a pickle at that point, if you know that.
And all of those are prepositions. Behind the eight ball, in a pickle, under the weather.
So. Why am I not behind the pickle and under the eight ball, right? There's no logic really behind it. With the game it is, because you are literally behind it. But with the other ones, it doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense unless enough about the language to be able to say that. Yeah. We've got a couple more about these. And then I want to ask you if there's any kind of social implications about these. We mentioned some are more about work and some not. And then also I want to add something else. I wanted to ask you if you thought about if there's a connection between these idioms and speech itself in terms of pronunciation or something else. If there's something else we can add to that, because I have a thought about that. But first we have two more.
Hit the nail on the head. It's when you answer perfectly, like you really got the cue on that. And you say exactly what everyone was thinking. Mm-hmm. You really hit the nail on the head. Mm. So you really understand what's going on and you gave the perfect answer.
Mm. Or some people say bingo sometimes, right? Or bullseye or some idea there, which is often like a game reference. But here it's not a game reference. And if you've ever done any construction of any kind and you built something with a nail and a hammer, you've maybe had that physical experience of, boy, so satisfying when you literally hit the nail right on the head versus missing it or just clipping it to the side, because it really drives the nail in. And maybe when you when you drive the point home, right? Exactly. So
when your answer hits the nail on the head, you drive the point home.
Yeah, there we go. We could do this all day. We'll be here next week. It's the comedy hour. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I am not a big fan of sport, or I'm not a big fan of some type of food. But if you're not a big fan, the words themselves sound like you're talking about, it's something that's, it maybe sounds like a small fan, but I'm not a big fan of means I don't really like that very much. It's not my favorite thing.
And my guess is this one, if for a learner of English, it might be an easier one besides some of the other ones, because you have the word fanatic, right? So they probably know, oh, I'm a fanatic/fan of sports, as you said, or baseball or something, soccer, probably something specific. Mm-hmm. And that's probably pretty easy to get that meaning, but there still could become some confusion because the word fan has a literal meaning too, aside from fanatic. It's that thing that moves the air around and circulates the air. So that could actually cause even more confusion. And we're going to go on. We're going to now keep that needle moving and go towards words that are not necessarily idioms, but words that might just be confusing. Sorry, go ahead.
I want to talk really quick about these ones with different social implications. Mm. People say, you're telling them a story and they're like, oh yeah, tell me about it. Mm-hmm. And so really, they're not saying tell me anything. They're just agreeing with you. They're using it as an agreement. So if you're telling me a story about how you can't find a saying for that in Mexico, and I know all about that, right? I understand. And I'm like, yeah, tell me about it. Mm-hmm. It's just I agree with you.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and this is really important for turn-taking and active listening, and you need to know that's a choice that you have. It also shows empathy, or because I've been there. Tell me about it doesn't mean, go ahead, I'm listening. It means, it could mean keep talking about it because you have a sympathetic ear, but it could also just means, hey, I'm listening to you and I'm right there with you. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Mm. And then the other one with different social implications is, how are you? Hi, how are you? So most of the time when people say that, they don't want to hear about how you couldn't get in for a haircut and you have this ache in your ankle and you didn't sleep well last night and you have so much work to do. They really just want to know. It's like saying hello.
Yeah.
Hey, how are you? Good. How are you?
It's a greeting, not an invitation to think I'm your therapist. I think And that also differs culturally too, from what I've heard from a lot of my students. For example, sometimes we are seen as colder or warmer perceived by other people, because this might be part of that, right? You might be inviting people to speak and I'm not aware of that. And I think it's just a greeting. And so then you think I'm cold because you just asked me how I am and I didn't actually answer you. Or the opposite might be true. I know for people coming from a Slavic background, often they don't even ask the question, how are you? Because they don't think it's useful unless they really do care and they really know about you. So if somebody asks you this question, you want to answer it, right? And you want to tell them about how your father has been feeling, or your toothache, or something like that.
That varies in different parts of the country. You can stand on the street corner and a stranger will tell you their entire life story. Whereas parts of the country, they're like, I don't care. I don't want to hear it.
Why are you talking to me? Go away. Yeah. I'm getting worried now. Yeah, that could trigger something in people for sure. And I have another friend who's a little bit older. And at the time that we're recording this, it was recently Thanksgiving. So he was saying how we were talking about, oh, it's so good to be together and have Thanksgiving again after those years of COVID, and how he was just thankful to be able to go to a grocery store and just talk to the teller. And I think that, and I know in some countries, I think in some Scandinavian countries, they have special checkout lanes for people who don't have that much social opportunity and they just want to go and chat, maybe for your grandma or somebody. And so that is totally a need. But let's say you're in the quick checkout lane, right? And somebody says, oh, hey, the cashier says, oh, hey, how are you? How are you today? And somebody's really telling their whole day and everyone in line is getting angry, right? That could cause a problem too.
So I just wanted to go over those couple with just the social implications, that if you're not a native English speaker, you might not even understand that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And so there's all these layers that I'm seeing already, right? There's a vocabulary layer. There's a meaning layer. There's a grammar layer about getting the right preposition in there, perhaps. Right. And all the things, you have to just say them just right. It's a formula, right? And if you can do it right, there's an art to it. And I don't see it as black and white. I see it as a continuum. So we started talking about being a fan, being a fanatic and not a big fan, and how that's becoming more figurative rather than literal. So to me, it's a continuum. And now maybe we can talk a little bit about phrases that aren't necessarily idioms, because they don't have a stock specific way to say them and a specific reference that they have, but things with multiple meanings and that still could be confusing, right? Because they both exist, these meanings, for example. And then I want to ask you after these, I want to ask you maybe what your thoughts are on how the pronunciation might come into play or something else. We talked about intonation, but I'm thinking more about like connected speech as well, to throw that out there. Yeah. So first we have maybe five or six phrases that have multiple meanings. So now's the time of year where people might be thinking about giving gifts or thinking they have just too much stuff in their house, and they might put together a bunch of things to send off to give as a donation. So that's the first phrase that I'm thinking of.
So give away. Mm-hmm. So that is what I spent a lot of my holiday doing, packing up stuff to give away. Packed up all the Barbies. It made me really sad because my girls are getting older. I'm going to give those away. Mm-hmm. But another meaning of that is to tell something that's a secret. Mm-hmm. Don't give away the answer. Mm-hmm. And so there's a more literal meaning, give things away, to give it to someone else, to give it to Goodwill, to give it to... And there's the other meaning, that don't give away the answer. Mm-hmm. Don't tell something that's a secret. Mm-hmm. Which is like another idiom, don't spill the beans.
Yes, I was just going to say, this one technically isn't an idiom, right? Because it's not some words that refer to some other words, but I almost said give away the beans. Now I'm mixing my idioms / metaphors. So give away it looks like a phrasal verb, basically, right? I've got a verb and then I've got a preposition here. So give away, which is different than give up, right? Or give out, or give over, right? All these phrasal verbs, you just switch that preposition and boom, you've got a word with a new meaning. But here we're talking about same set of words with multiple meanings. And in this case, we have an idiom that also refers to the same as one of those meanings.
And English has a lot of words that mean different things. Watch, I'm going to watch this program or watch, I need to tell the time. And so there's a lot of those, but these particularly are phrases and they're made up with preposition.
You're making me think of all these things we're talking about. It just makes me think, first of all, I am sorry for people who have to learn English, right? As the kind of default universal language, because it is difficult. It's really difficult. And to me, all these things we're talking about now, it's like, oh my God, English is, it's like an onion. You just keep peeling the layers back and you don't even realize it until you start digging into it. And it just seems to never end. So I just wanted to get that in edgewise. Sorry.
So the next one that we'll talk about is takeout. Ooh. So after Thanksgiving, we probably had a lot of stuff that we needed to take out to the trash. We had to take out the trash, right? Or the other meaning would be to get takeout. You're so sick of eating food that you're just going to get Chinese food or sushi.
Absolutely. And think about how you say those, both of those things, since we were talking about the language aspect too. I'm going to take out the trash, phrasal verb. Stress on the preposition, take out the trash, but I'm going to get some takeout, stress on the first word in this case. Is that what you were going to say? Did I cut you off?
No, that yes, but to make it even more tricky, yes, let's just change the
another layer, yet another layer. English is like an onion. I think that's what we're talking about today. Awesome. So we have, you know why? Because a minute ago when you said give away, I was thinking, oh, now she's going to say it's a sweepstakes because it's Black Friday and they're going to give away. They're going to have a giveaway. And I was starting to think about how you can stress the wrong part of the word, not the wrong part of the word, but a different part of the phrase and get a totally different meaning.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we have that with takeout too, also. The next one is similar because maybe it's not a different meaning, but maybe it's a different aspect of the grammar. So we've got workout and work out. Tell us a little bit about those two.
This one can also have a different, I'm going to go work out and I got a good workout. The first one, I'm going to work out, which is the verb. Work out is the stress. Mm-hmm. And then I got a workout, the noun. But there's another meaning too, where if we're having a disagreement, we're going to work out differences.
Ah, that's a good one too. That wasn't even on my radar. I was thinking of the noun and the verb, work out. And now I'm taking one of those and making the same pattern. And now it means to, you said come to an agreement, right? Or
come to work out our differences. To come to an agreement to figure out our problem.
And I'm trying to think, I can use that as a verb. We're going to work out, maybe double primary stress. I'm going to work out my problems.
It's the same as the verb, right?
Yeah.
It's the same stress.
Mm-hmm,
I'm going to work out at the gym. I'm going to work out our problem, but I got a good workout.
Yeah. And I was thinking too, I don't know if we can use the noun as in coming to an agreement, right? I don't think you can say we went to our couples therapy and we had a workout. Like it doesn't work in that case. There's no noun that goes with it.
No.
But you wouldn't know that, right? If you're coming to English as a second or third language, then you would say, oh, there was a noun, there was a verb. Oh, here's another verb. There must be another noun. Nope, sorry, doesn't exist. And people puzzle through that. And sometimes I have to be the one to tell them, like, I know you're thinking there's a noun. There must be a noun that you just don't know. It's not you. It just doesn't exist. We have to think through that.
Two examples are coming to mind. I knew someone, the mom was Persian, and she would say, oh, I'm on cloud 7.
No.
And so like, it's 9. But how would you, what's cloud 9?
Yeah, like, and why 9? Do we have any reason? No. And also, if 7 is often a lucky number for people, you'd think, hey, actually, that makes more sense. So sometimes these quote-unquote mistakes that people make just because they don't know, it's sometimes what they come up with, I find is better. Very often, I'm like, man, I like yours better, and I wish that were the way, but I'm sorry to be the one to tell you.
My Italian friend's mom would say, oh, you crack me down.
Instead of crack me up.
And it's that the second one was a prepositional problem. The first one was why does it have to be 9?
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense. But all of it makes for good humor. So don't try to avoid these phrases because you think, oh my God, if I mess up, they're going to laugh at me. No, it just makes a great conversation and it makes it more memorable too. When you can point that out, the next time she says that number 7, she'll be like, 7, oh, 9, I'm on cloud 9. And it just makes it easier to remember those things.
Yeah.
So say them anyways, say them wrong, we'll help you. And then you're going to say them right.
Say them wrong. I have clients who say, I'm so funny in my old language, my other language, and I'm not funny here. Like, mm-hmm. I was always the guy who people, like, I was the funny guy, and now mm-hmm. I'm not the funny guy.
And that's me, man. That's me in French and Spanish and Arabic and any other language. I am not that funny. And I realize, I think why is a lot of my humor or what I find funny, it comes from these play on words. It comes from being witty about that. And I just don't have enough language in my other languages to do that. So I don't feel funny.
Oh, I with my students, I would work on jokes mm-hmm. for multiple words. And why are these two words related? By the time we're done with it, it's not funny at all. Through it so much, mm-hmm. but the jokes are always based on these two words are related mm-hmm. or these two words are the same words, and that's what makes the joke funny.
There's multiple meanings or there's an incongruence there. And yeah, that's the thing that makes it funny, which there's, what is there, like 7 kinds of humor or something. But to me, those are the ones where once you can do that in a language, once you start noticing that, you can be like, oh yeah, I'm good. Like yeah. I start to notice.
Yeah, you're a master by the time you notice that stuff.
Uh-huh. Yeah, in whatever language. So just to say, yes. Anybody listening out there, if you're having trouble with any of these things, it's part of the process. It's totally normal. And there's definitely yes. people out there to help you. And the more, the funnier and more enjoyable, I think, things are.
Yes.
Totally, totally. So let's keep going out. Keep going down the list, right? I'm looking at the verb work out. And I said, let's keep going out. There's another phrasal verb. You and I are not going out.
So, sorry, I keep looking up because my other screen is above.
Oh, no worries, no worries.
So makeup or up.
Mm.
So up is I need to make up a story for my class and we need to make up. We had a fight and we need to make up. We need to heal our relationship.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And here again, so, I was thinking about noun verb. I thought you were thinking, oh, I'm going to paint what my grandmother used to say, paint my face. I'm going to put my makeup on makeup. And she used to use it as a verb. She would say, I need to make up my face. Right? That was my grandmother. I don't think anybody says that anymore. Have you heard that?
Paint my face.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or even make up my face as a verb.
No.
Yeah, not so much, right?
Yeah. I'm going to put on makeup.
Put on makeup. Exactly.
And make up as in invent a story or heal a relationship is 2 words.
Ah, that's also very interesting. Yeah. Yeah. How sometimes we can visually see it. And words and phrases, they change over time. So, for example, if you take the word, let's take the word, I'm going shopping and I'm going to use my plastic thing to pay for my items, right? I'm going to use my, is it credit space card? Is it credit dash card? Is it 1 word, credit card? That changes through time. Mm-hmm. So maybe this thing of make and up, maybe some of these things, maybe it used to be a part. Or maybe it had the dash, and now maybe it's together, and maybe that helps. So I'm wondering if there's some historical aspect.
I think when people said, I'm going to make up my face, then it probably, maybe at that time it was 2 words, and now it's just make up the thing.
Yeah. And in this case, there's a direct object, right? Make up something. Make up my face. Make up a story, right? Direct object. But now when you're talking about a relationship, you wouldn't say, I'm going to make up my relationship. No, that doesn't make any sense.
No.
So I have to know that with this meaning, I actually have to change the grammar and I have to say, we're going to kiss and make up, right? And there's no direct object. That's an intransitive verb there.
Which is one of our cliches.
Cliche.
Don't have to kiss, need to make up.
Exactly.
But it's endured through time that you hear it all the time.
Because or you'll see it in a movie and you won't, maybe you'll get the main idea, but you won't get that extra information that helps with the details of the story as well.
Right.
So you probably hear a lot of these, but you might be dismissing them because you just don't get it. And that's a shame because the more you get, I think the more the happier you are. So we've got a couple more of these confusing multiple meaning phrases. I'm loving this because I love to dig into these things, often they only come up like here and there, once in a while. And for example, when I work with actors, a lot of the nuance of the script is in some of these things. And if English is not their first language, which is normally the people I work with, it's that I have to explain like what that means, even if it's just in the direction. They need to know that to make it work.
Right. To awesome. Understand what they're trying to convey.
Exactly.
So the next one is blow up. Mm-hmm. And it means to explode. But it could also mean explode in a less literal sense, like you get mad very quick, get really angry really fast. And if I don't get out of this traffic, I'm going to explode.
Yes. I might not say the word explode. I'm going to blow up. Yeah. Or why did you just blow up at me? Oh, I'm sorry. The traffic is making me really annoyed. And I'm sorry. You're the one sitting there.
Blow up at me. Mm-hmm. Why did you get so mad at me?
It reminds me of Looney Tunes, the old Looney Tunes cartoons, when you'd see the smoke coming out of their ears. That's what I presume. Right. Somebody's building up steam and then they're gonna blow up. But you could also literally blow up a balloon, right? And there doesn't have to be an explosion. You're just making it larger.
Blade. Another one. Blade. Nice.
Yeah. And you could make a noun out of that too. You can say, hey, what happened with your ex-boyfriend? And you could say, oh, we had a massive blow up.
Yeah.
Yes.
A lot you can do with that one. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
This is so
super fun.
I love this.
Yeah. And I could talk days about this stuff, and which is why I love like finding people like you to do these episodes with, because it's really nerdy and I'm really into it. And I love finding other people who can just nerd out for a little while, and people who love enjoying listening to this kind of thing. So thanks for taking part in this with me. And thanks to everybody out there who's listening too. So we've got one more with a multiple meaning phrase. Let's see how much we can squeeze out of this one.
Okay. So pass out. I'm going to pass out the papers. Mm-hmm. So you're giving things out and pass out. Like you feel a little faint. It's so hot. And then you lose consciousness and fall down.
Mm-hmm.
So you faint.
So pass out, meaning I like that one. Distribute. That's really nice. And to pass out, same construction, phrasal verb, right? I'm going to pass out the papers. I'm going to pass out if I don't get some water soon. Let's see. Yeah. So it sounds exactly the same, and there's probably no way you might differentiate that unless you have the context there, right? Which sometimes makes for really good jokes or really good memes as well. So see if you can make jokes out of these yourself too, because again, that's going to show that you're really mastering the use and the language here.
Yes.
Totally, totally. Now, what do we have about, tell me about maybe a cliche. For example, how it might be different than the other two categories that we talked about, idioms and just multiple meaning phrases.
I think that the thing about a cliche is that it's been used so much. For example, an idiom is, it's raining cats and dogs. It's raining so hard.
Okay.
And people use, it's just so widely known and it's just used for so long that it's a cliche. And so that's one that was an idiom. Sometimes they're just sayings that have been passed down. The first one is, I lost track of time. And if you hear that, lost track of what?
What?
And it just means, another one, time just got away from me.
Yes, it's an old way to say things. Like earlier when I was saying, oh yes, my grandmother used to say this, right? And maybe these ones are in transition and they're a bit generational, right? For example, I think you mentioned something about the kids and they're like, oh, why would you say that? Who says that? Nobody says that anymore. And these are, I'm thinking of my own age right now. And I'm thinking of how we are now saying more often, oh, that tracks, instead of that makes sense. So I feel like that actually helps lose track of time. And you say, oh, that tracks, meaning something makes sense. And maybe that can help us get this or understand this meaning again. Do you see what I mean? Yeah.
But I think that's a pretty common one that you would hear. Oh gosh, I lost track of time. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. And maybe these things will be replaced by other things, right? And things often start like a lot, depends on where the change comes from and what kind of change it is. But once they get enough traction on social media, I think they get used more frequently. So probably a lot of these things are going to change more quickly than they used to, right? And some of these are going to have staying power and some not.
Yes. And staying power with the older generation, whereas the new generation probably it'll disappear because they just don't use it.
Or they want something new, so they always want something to change. Yeah,
Right.
we'll see when this generation grows up what they're still saying and what they
Yes.
remember having used to say. That'll be very interesting. Yeah,
Right.
which is something I love now, how we can track these things, right? Through computational linguistics, through AI. I remember there was a time before, let's say, Google Books, right? And now you can track through Google Ngram, you can track how common a word is or has been through time, and you can see like the peaks through the printed word at least, right? But now we've got so much social media recorded and our voice, I bet we'll be able to track these too and say
Or
like,
just the words they
yeah.
add to the dictionary every year.
Also, yeah, totally, right? And even by the time it's in the dictionary, you know you're already late, right? If you're not already using that and it's in the dictionary, wow. Yeah, exactly. So there's a couple more we've got here. What's another one that's about time, but a little bit different?
So it lasted forever, or it lasted an eternity. Either of those. I would say, oh, gosh, it lasted forever. You had to go to a talk for something you think is not interesting at all. And they say, how was it? Oh, it lasted forever. It lasted an eternity.
And that's getting a
So,
bit cliche nowadays. Like we just use it so much. It's just like its own set thing, and you don't even question it anymore. It reveals more behind than just those words. Yeah. Yeah, and I feel
Exactly.
sometimes there's a time component there too. Like the next one is interesting to me, especially the first one, right? Anytime you had the word of, it seems to be more cliche, right? Track of time. The next one has the word of in there to compare it to something else. Tell us
Right.
that one.
So that one's nerves of steel. And if you have nerves of steel, that means you are not nervous. You are steadfast in your confidence. And I think it's a good thing to have,
You're
but I guess.
cool-headed, maybe in an emergency. Yeah, you don't
Right.
tremble
Right.
easily, let's say.
The cardiac surgeon had nerves of steel. That's a good
Right.
thing.
Yeah, it would be a good thing, but I don't know if I said that to somebody who was about 16, I think they'd have to stop and think about what that meant, right? Because for us, it's very cliche. Like we've used it, seen
Right.
it all over the place. And so for us, just old, let's say it's old hat.
Heard
It's
it
very
all our lives.
recognizable. And we don't have to think about that anymore. Even as native speakers, native
Right.
speaking child in the US, they might have to pause for a half a second and figure that
Yeah.
out, right? Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely. I love the next one because I feel like I'm always using it myself. Right now, as we're recording, it's almost Christmas, and I feel like it's just after Thanksgiving, just before Christmas. We're in the
Calm before the storm.
Absolutely.
And this one's funny to me because, yes, this is the calm before the storm. Things are about to get crazy with Christmas. But where I'm from, people actually use this like for real. There's a lot of hurricanes to Louisiana, the Gulf Coast. And I think my family evacuated to Florida, to the beach for one of the hurricanes, and they went to the beach. It was beautiful. Once the storm actually came in, it was not as bad as it got for New Orleans. Really rainy and windy and all that, but so it is a real thing.
Literal. It's literal. You could literally talk about the weather and the storm and the calm that occurs before the storm, right? Or
So
you could talk
there
about
are
your life.
people in the country do talk about it. In various parts of the country do talk about it in real terms, but also what's going on. Like I always think May is, I have kids in school. May is insane. Like I can't handle May. And before that, things are relatively calm. You can deal with your life. And once May hits, it's tough.
Forget about it then. Yeah, you have to ride out the storm to use another phrase.
Right, yes. You have to ride out.
And then there's the eye of the storm, the calm before the storm, riding out the storm. Yeah, I feel like there's a lot related to storms. Makes sense. It's a thing that we go through. Absolutely. Yeah, a couple more. We've got a couple about time here that I think might be a bit cliche. Go ahead.
I think so. This would be something your grandmother would tell you. Only time will tell when you're thinking, I just don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what to do. only time will tell. You can't, and like my mom says, you can't see around a corner.
Oh, that's a good one too. Yes. Yeah. I feel like somebody's patting me on the back as they say that. Only time will tell, because you're anxious. You want to see what's going to happen. And through their experience, they're telling you to just relax and just wait, and then you'll see the answer soon. Yeah, that's a good one about time. And the other one, which is, my grandmother used to say this one all the time, and I find myself saying it too. What about you?
I say it all the time. Time flies when you're having fun.
It's a set phrase. I wonder if this came from a movie. I wonder if this phrase, time flies when you're having fun, I wonder if it came from a movie, because when you say cliche, to me, it's like in a movie where we have these tropes, right? We have these things that are just have been used so much, right? There's a trope for this and a trope for that. And everybody knows what's going to happen, right?
Right.
You hear that creaking of the door in the scary movie, and you just know what's going to happen. So there's tropes there. And I feel like maybe the language counterpart to that is a cliche, right? It's just something that's used so often and really recognizable.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. So I don't know where that comes from.
I don't know either.
And I've actually said this one recently. My daughter made me a PowerPoint for what she wants for Christmas with links to everything. And I said, do you think I'm made of money?
This is really good. Yeah, the money one this time of year, I think, is there's probably a lot of idioms we could use. And so we can say, does money grow? Money grows on trees. I feel like that's one. Yeah. Do you think I'm made of money? This is another one that I know I was told when I was a kid too. Although I never made a PowerPoint, I can tell you that. I wrote a letter to Santa.
Yeah, she made me a list. And then I said, this list is really overwhelming and confusing. And then she made me a PowerPoint.
No, she didn't. That is hilarious.
I guess what it takes, right? But I did say, I am not made of money. Mm-hmm, and I grow on trees.
You're going to have to prioritize your list and come back to me. She's learning like business skills, it sounds like. It's not just language.
Oh, yeah.
This is great. And how do you notice these things, to pull it all together? Do you notice these things when you're having kids, that you're using language and in a way that's not literal? Do you realize it when you say it, or is it only later when you sit down and think about it and make a list like we did now to talk about it?
Lately I've been noticing that I do use these a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think I say it and then I notice it. Like I say it, I'm like, oh, just in a thought, like, oh gosh, yeah, I did use one of those. Mm-hmm. I think I noticed that my husband is like, what? Like, he doesn't know a lot of them. I've noticed that when people's parents, my in-laws speak English, but they grew up speaking some Japanese too. And I feel like people who maybe are first generation or what is that? Second generation. They don't know as many idioms as maybe other people who had parents that spoke English as a first language. Mm-hmm. Or I don't know. It's really not scientific, just something I've observed.
That makes sense. Because you're busy doing other things. If you grew up in a house where more than one language was spoken, then it stands to reason. I don't know if there are studies either, but it stands to reason that you might not be able to get as deep. Like, you can get as deep into language number two as you can get in language number one. So at least in reading, I know that much is true. So if you, so a lot of parents don't know this who are trying to raise bilingual children. So they're focusing, maybe they think, oh, I really have to focus on language number two, when they have to remember also to focus on language number one, because then they can reach that level in language two.
Yeah, I feel like my in-laws, their first language is English, but sometimes I chalk it up to, I'm from the South. People in the South use lots of colorful language. Mm-hmm, and sometimes I chalk it up to that. So I don't want to completely blame it on.
That could be the case too, Maybe it's just a perception bias, right? Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, just to mention that you specifically said, and I think this was before we were recording, about your husband. What do you think is the reason? What's his language background, if you don't mind answering that question?
So his parents are older, and they had pretty much non-English speaking parents. Mm. And they but their first language is English.
Okay.
My husband, obviously he's heard most of them, but there's certain ones that I say that he's, what does that mean? I guess he's gotten used to it over the years that I use these, and I do chalk a lot of it up to colorful language of the South or of New Orleans. But his parents are older. They were in internment camps. They were in school in internment camps.
Oh, wow.
And some of that probably plays a role in every kind of
development. Acquisition, yeah. Acquisition and usage and reinforcement and, yeah, all of those things. Absolutely, yeah.
Right.
That's also very interesting to talk about, too, another time. But
and they were there with all people who spoke Japanese.
Yeah, you know, that makes sense too. Yeah, wow, what an interesting background. Yeah, because I think you and I were discussing a little bit of that just a tiny bit earlier, but then when you just suddenly said, oh, my husband might not know these, I think for people who were listening along, they might not know why. So I wanted to stop and make sure.
No, I do chalk it up a lot to, I speak that way. I think maybe it's the colorful background of Louisiana, of New Orleans, because I don't know. I listen to my friends and I'm like, maybe they don't say as many of these as I do. Maybe it's that I'm a speech pathologist and I think it's awesome. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I love vocabulary. I love idioms. I love doing these things too. And I'm living in Mexico and my roommate is bilingual and a lot of my friends are bilingual too, but to varying degrees. And so I really have to think about who might know what, because I'm the kind of person that I also like to use like all my language all the time, and it's just not possible. So sometimes I'm with friends who are not monolingual English, but their first language is English, and they're also an expat from the US, and then I'm just like nonstop, like oh, finally I get to talk to people, and I don't have to screen myself, and I don't have to think about if you're going to understand everything I say, because chances are you are. But as you said too, maybe that's just me as well. And a lot of people don't use them very often.
Yeah.
And I think
people who are really into language look for that. In our house, my husband handles all the math because sixth grade math is above my pay grade at this point. But I handle all the vocabulary and the writing and the, I think some of it could just be that if language is your thing, you're going to like push forward with it. And if math is your thing, then you're going to push forward with that.
You know? Yeah, you're gonna have other things. Yeah, and that's cool too. And yeah, it's just like the kind of people we are. And it seems we find each other. So that's why I'm really happy to have you on the show today, because I was really excited to talk about cliches and just words with multiple meanings that you might not know or you might not get. And also idioms that have a totally different meaning that you would maybe never guess unless you were told outright what something means. And it's a really, how should we say, it just goes deeper and deeper. It's a rabbit hole. I think we said earlier, it's an onion. English is an onion. It makes you cry. And it's, you could do a lot of good things too. But yeah, I feel like today I've decided that English is an onion. So I wanted to thank you, Laura, for coming today to talk about all of this with me and give all these great examples. Sorry, go ahead.
This has been so much fun. This has been a great conversation, and it's something that I think is really cool and love to talk about.
And very useful too, because as we were saying earlier, it's going to help your communication. It's going to help your partner focus on what you're trying to say. It's going to help build a connection with that person, right? And if English isn't your first language, then you might need to memorize these things at first and use them intentionally until they make sense. But it becomes really worth it, because obviously if you're working on your language, you're probably like us and you're probably interested about these things. So Laura, what can people do now? They know you, they like you. How can they find you and what can they do with you?
You can find me on LinkedIn at Laura Osumi, O-S-U-M-I, and you can find me on Facebook at the Accent Institute and my Facebook group, the Accent Institute, and you can check out my website at theaccentinstitute.com. I do sessions for accent modification to transform your accent. I can work on certainly these kinds of cultural kinds of issues, and of course rhythm and stress and all of that, the sounds and all of that comes with accent modification.
Oh yeah, this is perfect, because I think people who are doing our profession, who are doing accent work, they seem to come from two or three different places. Either you worked in speech pathology, or you worked in language, you have a language background, Or maybe you have a performance background and you just find it really interesting and this is what you want to focus on. But most people either come from language like me or they come from speech pathology like you. So it's always great to find somebody else who found their way here and has this shared passion, which I love so much. And I think people are going to love working with you because now they know a little bit about your personality as well. And can they just call you up? How does that work?
They can email me through my website. That's probably the easiest way. They can put a message message me on LinkedIn or message me on Facebook. So any of those things work. And I offer a 15-minute free consultation to just let you know you can ask me questions and I can let you know what I think I can do for you.
Perfect. That sounds like a really good way to start, is a consultation. And then you can see from there what somebody may not see for themselves. And you can maybe even suggest a path that they can go on, right? Awesome.
Yep. So I encourage that.
Yay. Very nice. Laura, it's so great to talk to you and meet you in person, finally, virtually in person. And I'm sure that we can think of other topics to talk about as well. And so if anybody out there has an idea, they can send it to you. They could send it to me. And I look forward to talking with you again.
Yes, thank you.
Awesome. Thanks so much. All right. See you soon then. Thanks again to Laura Osumi from the Accent Institute for joining me. And thank you for taking the time to listen as well. See you in the next episode. If you found this episode helpful in any way, please subscribe and leave a review. It's actually really helpful to me. Now, before I go, I have two tasks for you to do. First, I want you to register and come to my free monthly masterclass. They're on the last Thursday of the month. In just 1 hour, you're going to master a specific American accent skill. For example, the TH sound or rhythm. The Zoom registration link actually changes each month. So the second and maybe more important thing I want to ask you to do is to sign up for my mailing list, because you're going to get the registration link each month and you're going to get bonus materials before and after the masterclass that I only send to my email list subscribers. The email opt-in link is down in the show notes. Be sure to sign up for my mailing list and come to the monthly masterclass for free. I'm Bianca, your personal American accent coach, and I want you to know that your voice is your choice. Thanks for sticking around to the end of the show. I'll see you in the next episode. Bye for now.